Today, I want to talk to you about something that will give us a real insight on the Greeks. I want to talk to you about the Olympic Games. There are a lot of different games in Greece, the Pythian Games, the Isthmian Games, and the like. But the great Greek athletic competition was held at the Greek city-state of Olympia, and they are called the Olympics, or the Olympian Games, all right? That ought to strike a kind of familiar ring to you, it seems to me. Now, let me show you where Olympias is to start with. Olympias is located right down there. Olympia, the city-state, is located right down there in southwestern Greece, in the Peloponnesus, which is a terribly long ways away from where the action is in Greece. Most of the big city-states and the economic power and influence and all that is located way over here in the east. So Olympia is a long ways away. I'm in a secluded part of the world. Every 4 years, games were held there in honor of the head god. The head god is called Zeus, and the Olympics are held in his honor. He's supposed to watch the games and that kind of thing. All right? Now, by tradition, the first Olympic Games started in 776 BC. Our dating system. Of course, the Greeks don't use our dating system. As a matter of fact, the Greeks used the Olympic Games as a dating system. So if you wanted to say when something occurred in Greece, what year, you would say it occurred in the second year of the 12th Olympiad, and everybody knew what year it was. How about that? Sounds kind of clumsy, doesn't it? Now, first of all, athletes must get down to the Olympic Games, and it's a very hard walk all the way down to Olympia. As a matter of fact, it's thought to be part of your religious duty to kind of walk down there. It's like a pilgrimage. You tire yourself out for Zeus on the way down. It's thought to be very ennobling. Now, Christians used to do that a lot. In the Middle Ages, used to walk off on long pilgrimages here and there, and it was thought to be good for you. Okay? Now, it's not so far in distance, say, from Athens down to Olympia, like a straight line, except you remember the mountains in Greece. Every 20 miles straight ahead, you were going 40 miles straight up and straight down. So it's terribly hard on the feet walking all the way down there. All right. Once you get there, by the way, the only people that are allowed to participate in the Greek Olympic Games are nobles, Greek eupatrids, the nobility. None of you common peasant types would be allowed to run or to compete at all. This is for the upper classes only, okay? When you get down there, you go through a long period of training, sometimes 10 months. You train right on the track there at Olympia, and you have religious training and athletic training. It's all kind of a religious thing, and you swear religious oaths, and no doubt, other kinds of oaths. You're running bare and you stub your bare toes. You know, drat and other words like that are no doubt used by the athletes. If athletes are similar to athletes today, then. Okay. Now, the games were so special that when the Olympics were being run, what you have in the Greek world is called the Truce of Zeus, and all warfare stops during the Zeus Truce. Little poetry interjected there. This is one of the few religious customs which the Greeks maintained throughout their history. They just didn't fight during that period of time. And furthermore, if you were fighting somebody, the athletes of your enemy always had the right of safe conduct through your territory on the way to the games and back. And that was honored throughout Greek history, too. So the athletes are given passes right across enemy territory to the games. It's really more than just fun and games for the big people. This is a religious undertaking as well, then. Okay? Now, what kind of games? First of all, let me show you some shots. There's one. This is the stadium at Olympia, kind of wrecked today. That's a training field. It's now gone to flowers because nobody's running in that part of the world anymore. That's the track, the stadium track at Olympia. Those little
stone things that you see there are starting blocks for the races, for short distance races. There is something about starting blocks on the track which seems so modern to me, and yet the ancient Greeks had them too. When they ran in lanes for distance races, they staggered the starts as well so that every athlete running in lanes had the same distance to run, which I think is really kind of shrewd. I just, somehow or other, I don't expect that kind of refinement this early in history. Okay? Running, of course, is one of the big things they did. Greeks tended to run relatively short distances compared to modern Olympiads or whatever. Greeks ran short distances. They ran up to 3 miles, but they never ran anything longer than 3 miles. We do today, but that's because we're ill, I think mentally sick, that you run a race much longer than that. But there they are. Greek athletes always performed stark naked because it was lighter that way and a lot cooler, I suspect, too. And I don't know, maybe because that's the way the gods had you born or something, and it was just the way to run, okay? No women were allowed to participate in the games or to watch the games because women in ancient Greece aren't allowed to do any of the fun things. They are locked up in the back of the house. Ancient Greek males are male chauvinist pigs. And I'm sorry to report that to you, but it's true. I have more to say on that later. Some women are said to have disguised themselves as men to go in and see the events. There are a few women's lib people, anyway, but not too many, okay? Here we have the broad jump, or as it's called today, the long jump, jumping for distance. Now, this is strange. Look at what the guy who's jumping here has in his hands. What he is carrying with him is what's called jumping stones. They're pieces of rock that are kind of carved to fit your hand, and they, just from looking at them, they must weigh about 5 pounds apiece, a total of 10 pounds. And what you do is you get down to the end of the track, you know, and you start tearing down the track like mad with the pieces of rock behind your back. Then on the takeoff, when you go to jump, when you're in the air, you throw the stones forward. And the momentum of moving 10 pounds of rock ahead of you is supposed to carry you farther in the jump. That is absolutely insane. You don't see any long jumpers today carrying 10 pounds of rock with them down the track. That's crazy. You aren't going to get any distance that way. It's really strange. Now, one thing it may do for you, I say may do for you, the weight of those rocks out there in front of your body may kind of help to cause you to fall forward when you hit in the dirt. But I don't know. Really odd. Now, Greeks also threw the javelin. They threw the javelin both for distance, as we do today, and for accuracy, had targets out on the ground you were supposed to hit. And they had a cool way of throwing the javelin, too. What your Greek javelin throwers always did is they had a leather thong, like a leather shoelace, which was tied to your hand, like to the palm of your hand. And at the balance point where you balanced the javelin to throw it, you always wrapped the other end of the leather thong around the javelin handle, just like you'd wrap a string around the gyroscopic top to pull the top, okay? And when you cut loose of the javelin, you snap the string, snap your wrist, and the string unwinds around the leather thong unwinds, and it gives the javelin a spin. So what you've got is a rifled javelin as it goes through the air. Greeks understand that things that spin go a truer course, that things just kind of drift through the air. So I think it's really, really neat. Phew. Helps to bore a hole in the scorekeeper if he isn't careful too. Just a thought there. Okay, what else have we got here in athletic competition? Aha! Boxing. The Greeks had a combination of boxing and wrestling. The only thing that was illegal to do when boxing or in wrestling, this combination sport, was gouging the eyes. That's it. Everything else was legal. Oh, yowie. Yeah. Now, what they found out early is that people got really hurt playing these kind of games. And so what the Greeks did is they always had a little ring, which they put dirt in for the wrestlers, and they wet the dirt down so it was slippery, kind of muddy. so that nobody could get a good solid footing when they cream somebody, so you wouldn't bust in their sinuses or something. And people end up rolling in the mud and, you know, having a good time. Yeah. But still, people got hurt rather badly. You think about the Greeks today without thinking at all. You kind of think of them as kind of gentle people, you know, let us go to the theater and see a play kind of people. Well, some people went to the theater okay, but the Greeks are really rough kind of people, tough, hardy, and mean, and violent. They would have loved professional football, absolutely gone mad for professional football. A lot of physical contact there in the sports, would have loved that. The ancient Spartans, who have a code. By the way, there are no rounds in this, you know, like 3 minutes and everybody rests and gets stuff put on you by the trainer in a modern boxing match. None of that. You just fight until somebody quits. Now, the ancient Spartans, one of the city-states I'll tell you about later, had a kind of moral code that nobody ever quit doing anything. You just don't quit. As a consequence, when the Spartans started to play these games, somebody always died. Because, you know, you just kept pounding him until he quit, and nobody would quit. And the Spartans never boxed or wrestled, therefore, because they couldn't stand the manpower loss. And we don't go play those games. We don't can't spare the people. And pretty wicked kind of sport there, that boxing and wrestling. Yeah, you would have loved it, as professional football fans. Really like that physical contact. Sock him, Charlie, and see him bleed. All right. Now, comes the question here. What do you get when you win? Well, this is amateur athletics. You don't get paid, and therefore our Olympic Games today are amateur, and we don't pay our athletes either. Every time the Russians win something, we always get very sour grapes about it and say, well, you know, the Russians really pay their players. The guy that won is Colonel Smidlov or something, and he's in the Russian army and doesn't do anything but push-ups all day long. No wonder he looks like, you know, a giant there, and is winning the weightlifting or something. Whereas our professional athletes have to work for a living, selling breakfast food on television commercials and other hard work like that. And so no wonder we don't win sometimes. A very sour grace about it. Now, I would have you remember that the Greek games were for the aristocrats only, for the nobles. And early, they had the money. So it isn't costing them anything to go and play around. Other people are doing their work for them back home. So let's take off for a holiday and run the games. And ho, ho, isn't it nice to be rich and noble like we are? So they're not hurting any. Nobody's sacrificing to go down and run. All right. Then, too, you win some things. For instance, what you win when you win is a little wreath of plants which they put on your head. Now, it's a very sacred religious-type plant called laurel. You get a laurel wreath, which is a little plant hat which goes on your head. It says, whoopee, whoopee. Always what I always wanted. For the man who has everything, have a plant hat on your head. But it's more than that, too. And that's just the kind of badge of victory. Now look, there are some neat things to be won. For instance, if you are an Olympic champion, you have the right to have a statue carved of you and set it up downtown in your hometown. Oh boy, Greeks love to have statues put up of themselves. Now, come on, admit it, people. You would love to have a statue carved of you and have it set up somewhere. You know, pigeons and all, you'd love to have your statue out there. Have little children come up and say, look at that, that's the great Olympic champion. You say, yeah, it's me. Sign their autograph or something. Okay, you'd love that too. Because you're basically barbaric in your orientation. I have no doubt about that. Well, actually, you people wouldn't like to have a statue set up because you people are mentally ill, and that's your problem. I know this from talking to students over the years. You have programmed into you guilt complexes. You have kind of a phony modesty, which is added on to your basic egomaniac type self and your basic barbaric self, so that even if you got a statue carved to you, you wouldn't be able to enjoy it because you would feel so guilty because you liked it so much. It's no wonder you were sick, sick, sick. No. You think about it. Not for the Greeks, man. Wow, I am neat. Look at that statue of me. See them hiding downtown and peeking around the corner of their statues. Oh, little children, though. Going out every day and shooing away the pigeons. Really fabulous. Oh, those Greeks are prideful. Early barbaric days there. All right. Now, there's other little things that are kind of incidental to your winning as well. At Athens, one of the big city-states, and there are some hints of other city-states too, if you were an Olympic champion, you got free food for the rest of your life the state provided you. That is, the state has an athletic training table set up downtown for its athletes, and you get to chow in at the table with the other athletes for the rest of your life. Now, when you're rounding the last turn on the track, you got to think about free food there. If you can just make it across the finish line before everybody else, it's got to make you run a little faster, like the old saw of the horse running home to the barn. See that training table right in front of your eyes there. All right. So there's something to be done like that. Now, sadly, the large city-states always won the prizes just because of the law of averages. With a large city-state, there are more people, and the more people you have, the odds are that you are going to have somebody who's really neat, and he's going to win. This is why in the modern Olympic Games, most of the prizes are snatched off by the big countries, the United States and Russia. You know, Honduras hasn't had an Olympic champion for about 85 years. If there even is a Honduras anymore, it may have changed its name to something else by now. I don't know. My American history is shaky, obviously. Okay? It's kind of too bad. Boy, I tell you, though, if a small town got lucky, got somebody like this little two-bit Kansas town, got Jim Ryan, boy, think of the prestige and status when you go home, say, to Gardner, Kansas, with all 400 people, and you were an Olympic champion. Yowie. Hometown boy. Sell a lot of breakfast food there, on the strength of your athletic prowess. There was this one little tiny town in Greece that had an Olympic champion. And to honor him when he returned home from the Olympics, what they did is punched a big hole in the wall which was surrounding the town, in the fortifications of the town, punched a big hole in the wall, built a road going into that hole, and their Olympic champion entered the city in triumph through a doorway which no other mortal man had ever entered the city through before. And after he went through, they plugged it up with stone again so that no other man would ever enter the city by that route. Now, that's what I call prestige. How about that? Gee, that's neat. There's a little more writing on this than just that, plant hat which you get at the Olympic Games. Okay? Any questions now on the Greek Games here before I go on to another topic of interest, hopefully? Okay?